The steps of a man are established by the Lord, Psalm 37 says, when he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be cast headlong, for the Lord upholds his hand. I have been young and now I am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or the children begging for bread. He is ever lending generously, and his children become a blessing. That psalm is that, especially that piece about I've never seen the righteous forsaken or his children begging for bread, really has been ringing out as we've been in worship today. If you look at the whole of Psalm 37, it's a bit of a hard psalm. It's not written from a place, it doesn't appear in the psalmist's life, where he's only experiencing this like really happy-go-lucky season. In fact, he seems to be really wrestling with the fact that when he looks around, the wicked are the ones who seem to be prospering, not the righteous. That when he looks at the present day, kind of at the trees and not the forest, that's all he can see, and it throws him. And so this psalm of worship is him declaring the truth, speaking into the reality of the situation, kind of seeing the forest for the trees, that ultimately he believes and has seen in the grand scheme of things that those who walk in the way of the Lord experience the goodness of the Lord. Yeah, and so for us today, I'm going to share a little bit of like kind of a section of my story with you today in this story series. And as I knew I was doing that as we were in worship, and I kept thinking about that this will actually tie in a little bit to my story. And one of the reasons why, even when I read verses like that in a place of prayer or worship, and I don't feel that, where I don't know where the next paycheck's coming from, or if we can write it, or I don't know those kinds of things, that I can actually, I read that and it is hard for me, but I can find myself there, that I can come there and declare that, even in the present situation. And part of the reason for that is my story. Because I could, you know, I wouldn't say I'm old yet. It depends on who I'm talking to. People like Jesse and Michaela figure I'm ancient. Yeah, but people like Elaine laugh if I even hint at the fact that I'm old. I've hardly even started yet. But I'm certainly not as young as I used to be. And I like that. I have been young and now I am old, and I have not seen the righteous forsaken. There's something about that little phrase there. What he's saying is, I have a story now. This isn't just something I've heard. I've actually lived life long enough to see that even in a moment, if I don't feel it or see it or kind of seem to think it marks or is the experience I'm having, I've lived long enough now to look back and to see, I've never seen the righteous forsaken or his children begging for bread. Instead, I've seen the righteous in those places in a spirit or in a freedom of generosity. That the righteous actually, even in those seasons, get to live like in this life-giving way. Even when they're begging for bread, it would appear, they're generous because they're so firmly believing that God has it, that he will make a way, that they live out of that hope. As I was kind of praying about today and what I should share, the Lord has just really been impressing on me, interestingly enough, kind of my childhood, and to just share a little bit of that story. Some of you will have heard bits and pieces of this, but I was born in Calgary, and my parents were both Christians, but they were really young. So my mom was not quite, she was 19, kind of 19 and a half sort of thing when she had me, and my dad was only 21. And they had only been married for course, because they're obviously not very long either. They'd only been married about a year, I think, when they got pregnant. And so they got married really young. My mom went right out of her home with her parents, with her mom. She came from a broken home that didn't know the Lord. Her home growing up wasn't a home of faith. Probably in some ways was a little anti that, had actually kind of been turned off by it. And a really broken home. My grandfather wasn't a great man, and so she had experienced some real pain throughout her life. And when she was about 15, a friend of hers introduced her to Jesus. So she came to faith about 15 and met my dad not shortly after in a youth program that my dad was sort of a young leader in, and they kind of got to know each other and ended up getting married. So I was born into a home with really young parents. My dad grew up in a Christian home, but I would definitely say that coming into his adulthood was really trying to figure things out for himself, as far as he still had faith, but was realizing that a lot of what he'd known growing up needed some work and needed to get rounded out, filled out, I guess, maybe I would say. And so here's this young couple in this place of just kind of fresh faith, in a way, trying to figure it out together. And living in Calgary, trying to follow Jesus, we went to a pretty charismatic church already. We were part of a denomination that I ended up growing up in. And in the midst of that, they met some people who lived in Valmont, which is a tiny little town in the middle of BC. The only way probably that you know about it, if you do, is that you drove through it one time on your way to Jasper or Prince George or something. It's almost like right smack dab in the middle of Prince George, Kamloops, and Calgary. And in between those cities and Vilmont, there's really nothing but wildlife and about an Alberta-BC border kind of thing. It's just right on the BC side. So, and they'd met some people there that were part of a church that was small. I mean, it was a small town. I think in total, you'd be generous to say there was 2,000 people in the area. But something was happening. God was doing something to this church, and part of it had to do with a connection with young adults, with youth and young adults. So this church had started to try and find somebody who would come and serve that population. They couldn't pay them. It's a small church, right? But they're just looking for someone with a heart for that generation and felt called to it. And so my mom and dad just really felt like it was the Lord calling them. My dad walked away from a kind of a trajectory towards journeyman carpentry that he had been on. And just, he laid it down and said, yeah, I'm taking my family and I'm moving to the middle of absolutely nowhere. I don't know what we'll do when we get there. This isn't a job we're going to. We're following the call of Jesus. We feel very strongly, and they discerned it with friends and with other leaders and just felt like, yeah, this is what we're to do. And so they packed, me and my sister was 3, I was 5, up, and we went to the middle of nowhere. My mom had grown up in cities. My grandpa was a radio DJ, and so he just traveled around following the work in an industry that's very different than it is today. It was more like, it's kind of a big deal. Like the radio DJs of my grandpa's day were the big, like radio was the main media source. So they were, so they would go to the big cities. He worked in Winnipeg and Vancouver and all that. So my mom was a city kid. And we end up in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by a population that just was very different than they were. And when we got there, we lived with some people because they didn't even have anywhere to live. We just moved there and moved in with some people and started to pray. I remember that summer, my dad started fighting fires with the forest fire stuff just to make some extra cash because there was just no money and no work. And so he started looking and couldn't find anything. And here we are. They're trying to, jump into this church and serve this church. And, there was nights when they kind of had a weekly youth thing, I think, almost right away that they were a part of. And so they would just started dropping us off at this house with this family to spend pretty much, we'd wake up in our beds the next day. They didn't get back till so late. And we didn't know these people. We didn't, whatever. It was a bit of a weird season. But you're 5. So you're not processing all of this. You're kind of just in it with a childlike faith and not realizing that this wasn't everybody's story. It was just ours, so you think it's everybody's. And so not, you know, I didn't ever feel like in the midst of that really upset or complained. Or I was actually kind of excited, kind of enjoyed it. It was a really charismatic church, and God was doing something in that church. It sort of started to grow. I think at its highest, that church was about, we saw like the opposite of a church split at one point. The church, we had a church join, we called it, where two little churches both said, hey, what are we doing? We're in the same boat. Why don't we just do this together? And both came together. And I think at its highest, that church was about 150 to 200 people on a Sunday in an area where there's only 2,000 people. It's like 10% of the population is being touched by what God's doing in this church. So as a kid, it was exciting to see. I got to be a part of that. And I got to be a part of, with a really childlike faith, I got to be part of an active journey with Jesus. And kids don't ask the same questions adults do. Sometimes we have to remind ourselves of that. I've talked to parents a lot and shared bits of this story with them to just encourage them as they're trying to follow Jesus and take steps, that often our first worry is for our kids. Part of the reality of it is our kids aren't wrestling half the time with the things we think they are, because they don't even, it's just a different journey. There's a faith there we wish we had. And so just, you know, kind of when I look back on that season now as an adult, I can look back on it and realize some of the hard things of that season that impacted me as a kid, but not the same, like not the way they were impacting my parents. My dad didn't have a job for a year after we moved there. And I think if we were to read back into that season and I think back to what it would have been to be my dad, it would have been really hard. Like, I took my, and their family, like especially my mom's family who doesn't know Jesus, were coming at them because what have you done? And probably really coming at my dad, like what have you done? taking my daughter and my grandkids and off in the middle of nowhere and you can't even get a job and like they're going to, you know. And yet interestingly enough for me, the perception the whole time was very different than that. I got to sit in the back and I got to watch God. I often say, as we've come into the Anglican way and we talk about infant baptism and children of the covenant, that even though that wasn't my tradition, that wasn't sort of in the sacramental way it played out, people ask me, when did you come to faith? So this is part of what precipitated this for me. I've asked others who are going to share their stories to think about that piece. When did you come to faith and how did that happen? I was kind of born into faith. And I can share the stories of the moments when that was made my own and when I grew up into it for sure. And my faith was a part of that and all those things. But I don't remember a day when I wasn't in an active relationship with Jesus. So when I've heard people now talk about kids being brought into the covenant relationship with Jesus because they're part of a home, part of a household, that was very much my experience. And even at 5 already, but certainly as those years kind of started to go on, 7 and 8 especially, a really authentic relationship with Jesus. Part of the gift of it was, so I got to experience this journey with Jesus, where how on earth is this going to work? And we would go, and I remember living in this house and thinking, what are we going to do for a house? When all of a sudden my parents got a phone call from a guy who had just heard about them from someone in the church. It was like a father or something, says, you need to buy my house. And my mom and dad were kind of like laughing. My dad kept trying to, you need to come on, just come out and see me. I think you need to buy my house. And he wouldn't take no for an answer. So my mom and dad go out to see this guy just to appease him. Like, just like, he seems like a good-hearted guy. They're just trying to shut him up because he hasn't had a job in months. Like, they don't have any money. And they don't have any money starting to come. So even if they couldn't pay him more, like, they just can't buy a house, right? And they get in conversation with this guy, and just through this totally miraculous thing, the government had just started a short-term program to help people get into houses. And so the real estate agent had them apply for this thing, plus he was willing to take some assumption on the mortgage of this whole crazy, like, what is happening? We end up with a house. So I'm a kid. I get to watch this, and I just get to see, what are we so stressed out about? Like, in my 5-6-year-old brain, I think at times it even kind of probably bothered my parents. I was pretty audacious. Like, I didn't just become like this recently. I was this way. And so I would say things like that. Like, I don't know what we're worried about. Like, God's, you know, and he gave us a house. And as a kid, That's a big thing, right? Like, it's a big thing for an adult, but as a kid, you're like, he gave us a house. And it was a house on 10 acres with a view to change your life kind of thing. Like, this big mountain out the back. And that became my childhood. That's where Jesus, you know, part of what he was doing there was he was writing many stories, but he was writing mine. And he decided that my childhood would happen in this backdrop. And so we got a big sheepdog because there was fear of bears and things. And so the only rule for me as a kid, because we were in such a small place, was you can go wherever you want, do whatever you want, just make sure you take the dog. So we'd go for hours. And I would take this dog, and we would just head out. And I found the beginnings of a tree fort that somebody had started at some point. And I just started adding random wood onto it and created this, like, sanctuary, really. And I would just go out there with the dog, and God and I would just sit and talk. And I look back now and I think, wow, that's pretty crazy. It's kind of beautiful. And so I'm learning this relationship piece with God, but I'm also doing it inside of community that, as a young adult, I started to realize a lot of people have never experienced in church. Because there's only 2,000 people in this place and those kind of things, we needed each other to survive. So I remember nights when our well would freeze solid. And Dad would be down in the middle of the night with heaters and trying to get the water back on, but he wouldn't be alone. There'd be two neighbors that had come over, and they would do it together. And I remember sitting in Bible studies where, you know, I was 11, but the oldest person in the Bible study was 90. And together we studied the Word of God together. And so there was this community that kind of only really found its connection point in Jesus. And again, as a kid, you don't realize that's actually hard to come by. The purity of that. And so kind of experiencing then the Lord sort of teaching me without me even knowing I needed to learn anything. And kids don't think like that. But he's grooming, he's shaping, he's changing. I remember in that first year we had no money and just living by faith. And we came home one day and Dad went to open the back door of this house that they'd bought, and it wouldn't open. And so he had to actually like put his shoulder into it and give it a shove, and it pushed like $300-$400 worth of groceries out of the way that the community had just gone and sort of bought just bags of groceries and dropped them in our house when we weren't looking. And there was no card, there was no names. It was just like this, as a kid, this clear sense that God had bought us groceries, you know. At the very same time, like I said, I had really young parents, and this stuff was a different experience for them, and so it was stressful. And so in the midst of it, too, I remember feeling quite a disconnect in that they weren't always as present as they probably even wanted to be because of what they're working through. And I can remember moments clearly of going to my dad for no really pinpointable reason, but just to ask him if him and mom were going to get a divorce. And I can remember the shock in his face. Like, why would you ask me that? You know? But I think, thinking back, like as a kid, even though you're not experiencing the same way, you're seeing the stress, you're seeing what it's causing, you're seeing the anxiety. And then in the midst of this season too, when I was about 8 years old, I started to limp quite recognizably. And so my parents were asking me what was wrong. Like, you're walking funny. Like, do you have pain? Like, what's going on? And I just kind of keep shrugging it off. And finally it became so noticeable that they said, okay, we need to go see the doctor. So they took me in to see a doctor in a small little town. And all he could do was really get to the point in which he says, no, there's a problem here. You need to get him to the city to be looked at. And so we went, had x-rays done, saw a specialist, and I was diagnosed with a hip disease called Berthes. It's a disease that is only kids get it, and usually they're quite a bit younger than I was. So we've talked about it a lot since. It's either I've got a pretty high pain tolerance now that my dad found out. Not just saying like I'm a tough guy, like the doctors are a little worried about it. They're like, you don't feel pain quick enough. I wonder, so if I had it younger and just lived with it, or they're not sure. But whatever it was, I was almost 8. Usually you're about 4 or 5. And so they were even more worried about it, that it hadn't been treated. And so it became kind of a big deal. The your hip ball fits inside of a socket, and when you have Perthes disease, that hip, that ball gets soft. It starts to degenerate, and so it wears inside of the socket, and it actually starts to whittle away and get edges, and so it's incredibly painful. And if they don't do something about it, the body will begin to correct it, but it'll correct it all mangled, and then you're in real trouble. So that started what ended up being, we didn't know it was going to be this long, but it ended up being a 3-year journey for me of sickness, where when we went to the hospital, and I would be in a hospital for a month with traction. They'd tie weights over pulleys at the end of the bed that would pull my hip away from the socket so that it could do its thing, so it could mend without being rubbed. And then do physio with me to try and get my muscles limbered up. And then they would put me in cast braces from my hips down to my feet on both legs with a hockey stick put in. It was like literally for the first few times it was a hockey stick, which I thought was great. But there's a hockey stick in between my knees that would keep my legs at a certain angle that then for that 3 months would also keep the ball from rubbing. And that was the rhythm. So it was 3 months of cast, month in the hospital, 3 months of cast, month in the hospital. In years when there's a lot of development happening, a lot of especially relational development, a lot of sports development, like that's where you're learning all your basics that you don't realize. Anybody who plays high school sports didn't have casts when they were 7 because you can't pick up, you can't catch up again after, you know, it's sort of like you've missed that. So it was a weird season, but it was interesting because, again, when I look back on it, it was one of these seasons of incredible faith for me and of depth with the Lord at the very same time that it was incredibly painful. It was incredibly hard to not have the ability to enter into life with friends and to be a part of those kinds of things and just to feel kind of the pain of that season. Probably the most painful part of that season for me was the isolation of the hospital. Because we lived in Vilma, there's no hospital. The closest one was in Prince George, which was about 4 hours away. And so I would be there. And because of the situation at home, I rarely saw Dad in that month. He had finally got a job at a sawmill, which he just loved. It was kind of like he just hated it. But it was like a job. And it, you know, and so that's how they were providing. And I had a sister who as well needed care, needed her life kept going. And so I rarely saw Dad in those months and would often, in the side of a month, I'd have sometimes a week or even two where I wouldn't see Mom either. And so you're just in a hospital. We had a cousin of my dad's who lived in Prince George, and praise God for them, they started visiting. But I'd also have all these random visitors. This is like a total rabbit trail, but like pastors would show up to pray for me, which is great, except when you're 8. Because then it's just a weird guy you don't know who showed up in your room and knows your name and wants to talk to you. And that just feels like it goes against everything you've ever been taught. You're like, I don't understand what's happening right now, but I hope it's over soon. But just kind of like a season of isolation. And so at the same time of intimacy with Jesus, but also almost like a yo-yo, like a teeter-totter of intimacy with Jesus, total isolation, just feeling this real roller coaster of emotions in that sense. And yet when I look back now on the season, a lot of my faith, a lot of what I know of the gospel and I know of God's character and who he is actually came in those seasons. It was actually birthed and rooted in me in those seasons. And not, I think when I look back, I have to take into consideration it wasn't kind of apart from or aside from the heart. It was actually like that was the place of the learning. It wasn't like God just went, yeah, this is really hard, but I'm still going to show you. It was like, no, it was like in the heart, that's how I learned it. Like just the sense of God's sovereignty. You know, as a young kid who's thinking about it very simply, but had a strong sense God was still God. And this was not somehow the results of my sin. Like, I don't know if an 8-year-old's ever read Job as much as I did. especially the first three chapters. I read it over and over and over as a kid because I just thought this makes sense of my story somehow. That there's a sense in which life can be really hard, and that doesn't mean God's not God. In fact, he's God right here, you know. And so just kind of sitting in these places and walking through this journey sort of cemented some big things in my life when I think of the gospel and I think of Jesus and who he is and what he's doing. And like that question I said in worship, like, what do you know, Chad? I know some things because of this season of life. We were there until I was 15, we moved. And then I could tell you a whole other story. But I felt like this was the part of my story to share today. In that time, I was, you know, I was baptized. I was discipled, both in Sunday school. There was a couple of different Sunday school teachers that I can still remember clearly who taught me how to read the Word of God, how to study it, those kind of just as young. And then as youth pastors, people in that kind of junior high time that were really active in my life and in my journey. And as I've looked back, there's been, even from that season, lots of things that needed attention. Right? There's been things that through that, I'm not like any different than anyone else in this way, that there's pieces of my heart and my life that have needed healing. They've needed to find some balance to some of the things that as a child I'd concluded. And this kind of continuing place of growth. But when I look back, I think the thing that stand out to me the most, I think there's maybe three of them. One is that God is my provider. That when God asks you to go, when God asks you to do something, when God puts you in a certain direction and you say yes, the responsibility for the rest is on him. And you can count on that. I learned that as a kid. I learned it so well that by the time I was a young adult, it actually bothered my parents. Because I was making decisions based out of that belief that were now challenging for them, you know. But I thank them for it. That it really taught me that. So it taught me that he will provide. It taught me that. Interestingly enough, it taught me that his church can be beautiful. Yeah, that. I'm a part of a generation, like really when we even talk really small, like in my decade, who just, they've wrestled with that huge. And I was actually even part later in my story of a journey that God took me on with a group who really wrestled through that. That wasn't hard for me. They actually confused me at first. They had to help me understand why they were so upset. And I have had to thank God for that. That the church is a beautiful thing, and where it isn't, it's worth fighting for. That God can do incredible things with broken people. There was one other thing, and I can't remember it now. Oh, yeah. The other thing God taught me through that season was that he's still present and active, and that he is a powerful God. As a kid, I watched him do the miraculous. And I saw healings. I saw the spiritual gifts encouraged and released, especially as a kid, most often in actually pretty healthy ways. And so a charismatic expectation was birthed in me in that season as well. I've even had seasons where I've tried to quiet it down or live without it, and I just can't. It's impossible. I just can't ignore it. It's that piece of your story. My story tells me that God is an active God, and he wants to move in power. And we can expect that. But as you can tell from my story, it also taught me that just because he can do that doesn't mean people don't get sick. So there was this now and not yet, that when we got to the Vineyard later in our lives and people started using that language, just put language to a deep conviction of my heart. Helped me to be able to put words to what it was that God had taught me as a kid. the kingdom has come and the kingdom has not come yet. Yeah. Yeah, there's probably a lot more than that. When I think specifically of the gospel, I think of the pieces of it. There was pieces of it that actually needed some help, that I actually needed to better understand. Again, another story. But one of the things was I was really birthed in me as a kid a confidence that my salvation, that the gospel was permanent. That I didn't live with like a worry that every time I messed up, I had to get resaved or something like that, kind of a dynamic. And I think the Lord used that space and some of even the diversity of the community we were a part of to just sort of settle me into a relationship with Jesus that both felt very real. Like, there's just no question for me if there's a God and he's... And now, so then in retrospect, when I find myself here today and even in worship today, having thought about this a lot, this is how... This grounds me. This sets me. This allows me to say to people in a season like this, right? I've never seen the children of God forsaken, right? Or the children begging for bread. I've always had what I needed. You know, in days when Jan and I look at our reality and our finances and we think, geez, you know, how's this going to work? And we have these very real moments of, you know, adult concern. And we're like, you know, geez. And I get even sunk by it some days. What happens is that, though, I can't stay there because I could, I suppose, if I really wanted to be, like, throw a temper tantrum or something. But the reality of it is I can't. I have to. There's like a part of my heart, and it's because of the story. It's because I've seen the gospel of Jesus in play out in my life. It's not just, you know, black and white in the paper sense. Like, it's not words on a page. It's not just the story of my grandfather. It's not just sort of like the tradition of the church. It is all those things. But all of those things have actually been, they're in me. And that's my story. And so we get to share that. I can share that with you today. I get to share that with the guy who cuts my hair. You know, I get to share that with whoever will listen. And often the times when I get to share it are times like this, that we're in right now. Alec and I talked this week a little bit about this whole situation and how it's impacting people. And just the weight of it for many right now. And something's rising up in us right now to say, and I'm actually really thankful to God. I didn't think of this dynamic when I put the story series together, but I actually think it was part of God's idea. Is that I think right now part of what we're needing is to lean into the Lord right now, lean into our stories, lean into the good news of the gospel, and by it be lifted up. By it be lifted up above the challenges of this season. And the places where it has really been hard, like where our hearts and our lives are wrestling and wondering how the future will look and how this will go. And so even as I share my story today and as we share our stories together over the next number of weeks, I think that's my prayer. We're also going to set aside time for prayer. We're going to set aside time for worship. And to just as a community throughout this summer rest in and even reflect on this question, like, what do I know? Right? Like, don't ignore the other. It's not like, if we're not careful, I think it can become a little bit like an Oprah Winfrey Christianity, where it's like, just stop thinking about the negative, think about the positive, and everything will be okay. That's not what I'm saying. Come to Jesus with it all. But don't discard either side. Right? What do you know? Talk about those things. Share them with your children. Share those stories with those who God brings into your life. And hold on to both, you know. Because one of the things I know from my childhood is it can be real. Life can be really hard, and it can actually threaten and cost you things that you don't want to lose: health, marriages. These guys, like this is, you know. I also know that from my childhood, right? And I don't think we're wrong to recognize those things in our lives. that we, you know, people are losing their jobs, people are losing, you know, this has been, the divorce rate in COVID has been quite high, you know, because all of a sudden marriages that were just sort of like ignoring the problem couldn't, they got locked in their houses together. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is real stuff. It is costing people. Mental health, these different things, Jesus does not want us to somehow just like overcome that with positivity, right? But at the very same time, we're just, I think, sitting in a half-truth to not allow our hearts to say, blessed be your name. This is my Job reading. You know, my heart will choose to say, blessed be your name. You know? And even the Psalms of Lament, the high majority of them even end in that. I think there's one or two that don't resolve themselves in praise, in declaration. You know, and so to bring both to the table and to allow your story, to reflect on it, meet Jesus in it. And if you've never done this, to even ask Jesus, where were you? I've had times when I've had to sit back and ask Jesus, where were you in the hospital? And that answer has been so healing for me, you know, because that's the whole picture. So maybe we can just pray, and then we're going to come to the Lord's table together.